FSN Radio.
It's all about what's next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to and perhaps even watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today's 10/14/20. We've got a guest that you really enjoyed last time coming back to give us her take on the market. I'm talking about Michelle Meesh Schneider. Hey, Michelle, it's great to have you back on the show. I should mention that I've gotten your book and I've been reading it, really enjoying it. So welcome back here, and let's talk about the book Plant Your Money Tree. I always like the imagery there, and about how you make that tree pay off in the current insane times that we're going through now.
Well, even though times have been insane, from the book, what you've learned is about phases. And actually, the market had gone back into bullish phases. And when I say the market, I mean the 4 indices and a lot of the sectors a while ago. So if you're a phase follower and you can shut out all of the hype and the gloom and the doom and all the other stuff that people have to say in terms of their analysis and their take on why we should all be terrified and living under a rock, you would actually see that the market has done well and you would have been making money as we have over the last few months. The rally has been extraordinary. So that's where the book is very, very helpful, because it basically tells you when things are starting to change and you reach these inflection points, and that's what the market did after the initial swoon in February, March, and then when it hit its nadir at the beginning of April, it's been all up since then, going from a bearish phase to a recuperation phase, back into an accumulation phase, and now in a bullish phase. It almost followed it to the letter, like the book. So it doesn't have to be complicated. And that's my point in why I wrote the book, is because people are terrified of technical analysis and completely overwhelmed by things like, oh, you should diversify your assets and save your money and, you know, always buy and hold. This is the sweet spot in between. A little bit of technical analysis, kind of like what we learned in grade school, simple bar chart, and yet not preaching to you about buy and hold, because we're in a very changeable world right now. Nothing in this world is buy and hold, really, except for the fact that there's no rules anymore. All the rules have changed. So.
Yeah, interesting. I should mention your website if you want to check it out, marketgage.com. And you can find out about getting the book there as well as on Amazon. And I highly recommend it. Well written, clear, concise, easy steps for you to follow and to hopefully prosper in these crazy times. So we had that huge crash in March, really frightening the weak hands out of the market. And almost concurrently with that, like you said, it recovered. And it was such a rapid recovery that you have to wonder, can it go much higher? We've kind of been in a consolidation pattern since, I guess, kind of September, right? We kind of been consolidating a bit. Mm-hmm. Is it time to get out, or is it time to go back?
Well, first of all, we went right into it, so I didn't say thank you, Kerry, for having me back. And thank you to all the listeners who appreciated my being on the last time. So I just wanted to get my politeness out of the way. Now, as far as the market goes, well, a big reason why we've seen the huge rally over the last couple of months, few months, is because of a lot of stimulus, first by the Fed, that bought back junk bonds, used BlackRock to buy a lot of the ETFs, have added a lot of liquidity, have kept the rates low. And then, of course, the government stimulus that came fast and furiously. And on top of that, the other interesting phenomenon that came out of all of this was because people were home, and mostly young people, but not just young people, getting their stimulus checks with nothing to do, started to trade the market. So the liquidity to the market really skyrocketed, which I haven't seen the likes of since I was a commodities trader back on the floor, it kind of reminded me of that in a way, where a commodity would get hot. Let's say it was cotton or orange juice or gold or whatever it was. And all the traders from around the floor trading other instruments would go racing over there and start buying. They had no idea why. They didn't care. They were just catching the wave. And that's what's happened here. So now the big question is, what happens from here? So we have a couple of factors on the table. One is, if we've been living on stimulus, well, right now we know politically it's football, playing football with people who really need the money, but it's a political football right now. And without putting any judgment on it, because that doesn't help anybody, just saying from a pure technical standpoint, the market needs the stimulus. Absolutely, because the economy has opened to a degree, but there's still a lot of loan defaults, and there's still a lot of people who need the payroll protection. There are still a lot of businesses who have closed down, restaurants, particularly in the entertainment, the travel industry, the airlines have suffered miserably. So there will be stimulus, I think. It's just going to be a matter of how much and who wins at this point. I was pretty convinced that we were going to get some kind of stimulus package right before the election, and I'm still not fully convinced we won't. But at this point now, we know the market knows it's at a standstill. So we've plateaued a bit. Who wins the election? I'm not so sure that's going to have a major impact on the market per se. It just may mean certain rotation into different areas on a Trump win versus a Biden win. And that's something that we're watching for. And the other thing, of course, is even though you and I before the show began talked about COVID, the vaccine issues is definitely weighing on the market a little bit, with Johnson & Johnson now having somebody get sick from their trial. And the winter's coming. And that also could mean something more devastating. We don't know. We pray that doesn't happen. But we have, it's kind of like, it's so funny to me. It feels like a diorama. On the top part of the diorama is this scripted reality TV show of all this drama that comes out. And then it gets resolved and the market keeps marching on. But underneath the surface, there's like inferno. All these things I just mentioned as these sort of fires that are raging, and which one comes first to haunt the market. Right now, nothing really seems to matter to the market too much, other than the fact that we've been lofty and it's a good time to take profits.
So let's go back to something you mentioned, which is the Robin Hood effect. I actually opened a Robin Hood account, but I haven't funded it. And I guess it was a good thing because they got hacked. And all these people wound up with zero balances, but that's why we have SIPC. So somehow they'll get their money back, I guess.
Right. But
Robinhood is like the Facebook of stockbrokers, right? It's not so much your trades. They don't make any money off your trades. They make money selling that data to the Citadels of the world, who are front running and end running your stock picks. So they know what you've ordered before you even get it filled. And you then play the trade, so it's riskless trading. Is this really like a good thing here? And should these people with their $1,200 stimulus check gone to the casino, would they be better off at the sports book than at the Dow Jones or the New York Stock Exchange? I guess I should say.
Well, it's funny you should say about the sports betting, because DraftKings, which has been one of the hottest stocks this year, happened to really explode once football, basketball, and baseball came back on the scene. As limited as it is, obviously, with fans being able to go, they can still bet. I know the casino here, not all the casinos, but one of the casinos that has a sports betting window is open. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it has been sports betting. But do I think that it's a bad thing necessarily that these young Robin Hood traders with their stimulus checks have added liquidity to the market? As I said, it reminds me of the old days in commodities. So basically, you had like the whole sphere. You had the people who made money buying what was ever hot, getting in and getting out and building on that money and actually deciding that maybe they should figure out what they're doing if they want to hold that money. Then you had the people who just went belly up. They would make the money and lose the money as, you know, one full swoop. And then you had the people who actually became like market leaders and sages and gurus, because not only did they learn how to make the money, but they really actually understood now things like momentum and market flow and pricing and charts, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, I feel like it's the same thing right here. Is there, you'll see the fall off. You'll see the people who go bust. You'll see some people who live to see another day. And then you'll see people who have emerged from this, who say, wow, I started out as a Robin Hood trader, I've made lots of money, and now I'm going to show you how I did it.
Yeah, so like in anything else, there's winners and there are losers. And I like to say, especially in financial disasters, like the one we just had, like the one in 08, 09, you could be a winner or you could be a loser. And I guess it all comes down to getting over the emotional response to it and seeing the opportunities that are in front of you, because they're all over the place.
Yeah. And also, who do you choose to listen to? If you listen to macroeconomists, they don't know anything about market timing. And if you listen to a lot of traders, they don't know anything about the macro. So you really have to find people who understand both. And for example, back in February, March, we got out of everything and bought bonds. And bonds went crazy. So we actually made 40% during the whole COVID swoon, which is because we are incredibly experienced. We've been in these markets for 40 years, and we knew how to follow momentum and trend strength indicators. We knew how to get out of instruments that were starting to collapse. And we knew that because there was a liquidity crisis, the metals would fall, would probably be the first to recover. So then we got into gold and silver in April. So we've had a phenomenal year. We really have had a phenomenal year. And so I'm not saying that to brag or be immodest. What I'm saying is because of those floor days, you know, we're sort of the traders who built on, we're like the Robin Hood traders that did okay then and decided to actually get an education and then could come back after all those years working upstairs saying, yeah, we kind of know what we're doing now, so we can help you. We can show you. And that's why I wrote the book, getting back to the book, is because I wanted people to have some level of an ability to have this compass.
So I'll just give you a personal example and tell me what you think. My son, really, the only thing he ever listened to me about was when he graduated from college and we had a dinner and we went around the table giving advice to him, one piece of advice. I would take or leave. And I said, just start saving now, save as much as you can, live beneath your means. And he took me to heart, you know, he's saving like close to 40% of his after-tax income. And, you know, he's basically just putting money into the market every month. Is that enough? Or should he, what strategy should he be following in this case?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Auren Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Auren is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits, and has a premier 7-project portfolio, including its 2 flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Auren's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Auren's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Auren trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to aurenresources.com. That's A-U-R-Y-N resources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, first of all, that's awesome that he listened to his dad. I mean, that, you know, that's great. And actually, there has been a shift with the younger generation in that the savings rate has gone up and they are more aware of savings and they're pooling money together and then they're using the money to invest. I don't think he should do anything different except for the fact to understand one really big, big lesson that we have learned throughout the years. No matter how good things look, when you have a market that's up with a burgeoning debt and a burgeoning money supply, with more stimulus coming around, at some point there could be a bubble. When? That's not what should make you lose sleep. What you should be aware of is that when it does happen, just make sure that you don't get into this passive investing. The market always comes back, because it doesn't. And we are really in a very similar situation to what Japan was in 35 years ago when it peaked in the market in the late 80s and really never fully recovered. And they did all the things that we're doing here in the United States, dropped their rates, kept adding liquidity, was buying back stocks, et cetera, et cetera. So my advice to your son would be follow dad, have your nest egg, which is good. But in terms of investments, no, passive investing, this is a new world. It may not work. And because of everything that's gone on in the last 7 or 8 months, 10 months, and now Europe talking about negative rates, this is why you can't just say this will just go up forever. I can sit through a 50% decline because it's going to come back, because it may not at some point.
All right. So one thing I learned a long time ago, and I haven't always done it, much to my detriment, is to always take money off the table. Just like you're at the casino, you're having a great run in craps, and it can all just turn around and blow you out of the water. You'll go broke. So if you take money off the table, you'll have more to fight another day. Is there a formula for this? Is there a way that you recommend to people? And this is for seasoned investors. I consider myself one, even if my portfolio isn't seasoned, I am. But as well as people who might not have that much experience, Mish.
Carrie, that is such a great question. I'm really glad you asked me that question. We actually do have a formula for that. And as soon as you said the craps, my husband loves to play craps. Of course, yeah. We haven't done that in a while. And he'll start out, let's say, with this many chips or this many chips, whatever it is. And then once he builds on that, he'll always take his original chips and put them in his pocket. And now play with their money, so to speak. Unless he starts out losing, but he thinks the table is hot and he wants to give it, you know, a risk. And this is a great metaphor for the market. So basically, every investment that you make should always start by some kind of calculation of how much you're willing to lose on that trade. I never start a trade counting the money. I always start a trade parting emotionally with the money that I might lose on the trade. This is the only way that professional traders can really handle, because there's going to be losses. The win-loss ratio is irrelevant to how much you make versus how much you lose. So that's something you have to think about. So let's say I'm willing to risk, based on the amount that's in my portfolio, no more than 1% of my entire equity. So I'm just going to throw out a number because it's easy. $100,000, let's say you're trading with that. I will not risk more than $1,000 on any given trade. And how many trades I have altogether, I really don't want to lose more than 10% if everything goes to hell in a handbasket and all my positions get stopped out. So that's why I'm very careful on risk. So if I'm risking, let's say 1%, when I get to 1%, I go to a no loss stop. So now I've, just like those chips, put them in my pocket, taken out my money, put it away, and I'm playing now with the market's money. And then once I get to 2-to-1, depending on the market condition, if it's really a hot market, it may be 3-to-1, 4-to-1, I take my first profit target. Maybe it's 25%, could be 30%, could be 50%. And I take it off. And that's it. I've locked in the gains. And then what I do is I start to move up that stop. So where I was at a break-even stop for the balance, I start to move up. Not too close to where the current price is, because any blip in volatility can get you out and then it can go right up. But I give it a little bit of room so that it can handle some volatility. But at the same time, if I wind up getting stopped out, I've still locked in money. And that's the general rule. Risk about 1%. Try to take profits at 2, 3, 4, 5%. If it keeps going, take a little bit more at 7, 8%, and then start trailing up those stops. And that's how you catch some really big moves. And you really take your risk out of it.
Yeah, well, but you can have these short-term market gyrations that'll stop you out of every position. And then right after you get stopped out, you know, then it goes up.
Yeah, there's two things to say about that. Number one is when you put your stop in, whether it's a mental stop or a physical stop or a money stop, there has to be a reason for that. And again, back to the book, when you're looking at a phase change, you have now moving averages that you can use as sort of your floor. So let's say you bought it because now all of a sudden it cleared the 50 and the 200 week. In the book, it's week moving averages. For more active trading, I'll say daily moving averages. You bought it on the basis of it cleared. So your stop should be on the fact that it breaks. And even if you probe once, twice, three times, and you lose a little bit of money, maybe it's more of a 0.5% if you're probing as opposed to 1%. When you get it right, that's where you can make the 5, 10, 20, 30%. So that's all part of it. You have to be prepared to lose, and you have to be prepared to lose a lot, but very little. And you have to be prepared to hold it, or what, you know, we like to say that wind at your back kind of thing when something is trending. And we can use so many examples of that. Silver, I'll just say, we still have a piece of silver, the SLV from 1188. Why? Because we kept trailing. We took our profits. We kept trailing up our stop. Now we have actually tightened our stop a little bit here, because if it doesn't hold, we want to be out. And we add sometimes along the way. That's another thing you can do, is find a new place that has some support, buy a little bit more to the position, and then manage it either as a new trade or more active trade, or raise your stop on the whole position. Because even if that goes down, you've still made the lion's share on your initial position. There's a lot of stuff like that to do, and that the book doesn't really cover in terms of trade management, but there's a lot of good material on that. And of course, I'm always happy to help people if they want to ask me questions, like on Twitter or something.
Great. And we'll get your info. One more question. So people using options of hedging to try to lock in their profit, or at least minimize their losses. How do you view that?
You better know what you're doing with options, because people don't understand the Greeks, as they like to say. You have to really understand volatility, time erosion. When the market is pretty volatile, that's going to be your best time to trade options, because you can get in at a strike price and know that you have a target in mind. But it's not so dissimilar to what I just said. Even with options, if you have you have to have a mental stop on the physical price. So even if, let's say, you buy $2 calls, you want to know that if it goes down to $1, you're going to be out. So you may have to sell actually the actual equity against it, or just get out of your options. What happens to people is they go, I bought the option so cheap. If it goes to zero, it goes to zero. And that's really not a good way to trade. It doesn't really teach you anything. So again, if you're going to buy something, really have an idea of how quickly you think that move is going to happen, because the volatility is your worst enemy and your best friend when it comes to options. Time erosion can kill you. You can be right in price and still lose money on your options if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, you pay too high a premium, time, and all that. Well, right. Hey, and very educational as always, Mish. Just to tell us again how we contact you, how we connect with you on the web.
Well, the easiest way, because I'm on it all day and probably too late into the evening, is through Twitter at Market Minute, or just my name, Michelle Schneider. You can find me there. I do have several Facebook accounts, Mish's Market Minute Daily, LinkedIn, Michelle Schneider, and my email. People are welcome to email me. I will try to answer all emails, and that's mish@marketgage.com. But I'd say Twitter is probably the fastest, because that's really how I communicate with people every single day, all day long. It's the FinTwit space, which I think is fabulous. There's just so much great information, so many super generous people on there willing to share their knowledge, myself included.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. Any questions or comments for Mish or myself, why don't you send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com. Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Sign up for your free newsletter, Mish. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Carrie, for having me back. I look forward to our next meeting.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.